It's time to get spooky. Welcome to the show. Let's go.
Hello! Welcome back to the Spooky Scary Podcast. My name is Kat.
And I'm Chris. And we are exhausted.
Yeah, it is Friday. We both just did a work week. Now we are half corpse.
Honestly, at this point, I'm like 80-90% corpse. I'm just I'm barely animated. Like a level below a zombie. 90%
corpse, 10% fashion.
Coming to Disney Channel soon.
So, we are talking today about possessions.
Yes. Ooky and spooky.
Ooky and airy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, first of all, I feel like it's important for me to talk about this. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I have a bizarre fear of possession.
Yeah, I think you have talked about this.
It was like a childhood fear. For some reason, I think it stemmed from watching It with my dad, the 90s miniseries. Something about like the clown or whatever can like turn into like obviously whatever he wants, but also other characters. And specifically, there's this scene where the main guy, Bill, is, like, his wife is coming to the town, and she stops at this, like, gas station or something, and there's this old man that tells her where to go, but it's the clown, but she doesn't know it's the clown, and I'm like, that's weird. And I used to be, I don't know if it's necessarily, like, possession or if it's like a shapeshifter thing, but the idea that like you could be talking to someone and they're not actually them just hit something deep.
I get that though, like that's fucking creepy. So like yeah. it's a valid fear.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Your fears are
that's
valid.
That's why it scares me so much. Like when people talk in their sleep, I'm like, nope, stop that.
Apparently the other night, Stevie says, I like rolled over in the middle of the night and just like got in his face and said, go fuck yourself.
What the fuck?
I have no recollection of this. I don't even know what, like, I could have been dreaming about to make me think that.
And like, how aggressive of dreams do you have?
But yeah. Go fuck yourself.
When you wake up in the night and want to start shit.
I guess sleep me had a vendetta.
Yeah, your dream self is like, I choose violence.
Always and forever choosing violence, I guess. And I don't know where it came from. I would like this to be my formal apology for my aggressive sleepiness.
When I was a kid, I used to do a lot of theater, and I know that I sleep talk because I've woken myself up talking before.
Interesting.
Like I will suddenly be aware of the fact that I'm talking, and then I like am conscious, and then I'm like I'm laying in my bedroom in the dark, what was I just talking about? And it's specifically when I was in high school and I was doing theater a lot, I when I had like bigger parts, there were multiple times where I was like having some sort of dream that we were like performing the show. And then, you know how sometimes when you wake up from a dream, it's like snap all at once, you're awake. And then sometimes it's kind of like you fade out of the dream and back into reality.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to you? So like I'll wake up from these theater dreams, but it's like a fade out. So I slowly realize that like I go from thinking that I'm like on a stage delivering this monologue to like realizing I'm just like sitting up in my bed mumbling to myself. Are you good?
something in my room is clicking, and it's, like, picking up on my mic, and I have no idea what it is.
Could it be a cat?
Possibly, but I think I see all of the cats. I don't know, but it's driving me crazy.
I can, like, kind of hear it. Do you think it might be your vape thing?
No, I'm not even using that. I'm just holding it for comfort. I don't know. So, weird. Sorry to everyone listening to this. There's going to be a mysterious ticking noise.
I can hear it.
It also could be something outside. It was raining.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it could be
whatever. Like, it's ambient noise. This is ASMR.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy. You get an extra thing.
Welcome back to my channel. Today we're going to be doing ear-to-ear whisper ASMR.
That sounds absolutely horrible.
Have you ever seen the ASMR microphones where it's like a binaural microphone, so it has two sides that pick up, and it kind of mimics how you have, like, an ear on each side of your head.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually, like, have the mics designed, like, to be about the distance apart of two ears, and they put this, like, plastic thing over it that looks like an ear. So it's like a microphone, but it looks like an ear. ASMR people will sometimes, like, whisper back and forth between the ear microphones, or, like, there's ones where they, like, lick the ear microphones. Like, it's weird. ASMR, I, like, use it to sleep, but it's a weird place.
I hate that. I would like it to be known that I hate that.
The licking of the ear microphone?
All of it. No, start to finish. There was not a single part of that I liked. Like, beginning to end, fuck that.
I liked the binaural microphone. Just the concept of it, not the ear part.
Yeah, the ear part's a little funky.
Have you ever listened to, like, a binaural podcast or, like, something like that? It's where they, like, make the audio, so if you're listening to it with headphones, they make the audio actually sound like it's around you, so it's like going, like,
I've listened to songs like that.
They make, like, sometimes podcasts like that where it's supposed to be like you are a person and people are talking to you, and if you, like, close your eyes, you can, like, imagine you're in the space because you can, like, sense where the people are standing based on, like, which ears the microphones are in.
That's really cool. Actually.
Yeah, and I remember doing, there was, like, one on YouTube that was, like, it was, like, you're being held hostage, and, like, there's two robbers, like, going around you, like, talking to you, but you're supposed to be, like, in the narrative, you have a blindfold on, so it's, like, if you close your eyes or, like, do it in the dark, it really feels like you're just being kidnapped. But it had a whole plot.
Okay.
It wasn't, like, a...
Anyway, we're talking about possessions today, and I think Kath just was.
Was just possessed?
Yes. Wait.
By the ghost of ASMR advertising.
Exactly. Who goes first this week?
I think, you?
That's, okay, that's what I thought, too. Yeah, that sounds right. Because you did two last week, and, like, I went in the middle, so that sounds okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Getting into the zone. Okay. So, I'm doing the story of Roland Doe.
I was going to do that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. It was one of the first ones that I could find, like, a decent amount of information for. A lot of them, they were just, like, very short little things.
And yeah, like really vague.
I need more information, please.
Mm-hmm. And that one was well documented because it was like a actual, like, church doing that.
Right, exactly. So it worked out in my favor.
It inspired the Exorcist movie.
It did. I think it also inspired another one, and I don't remember if I wrote it down or not, so I guess we'll find out if I did.
But I actually didn't read too much into this story, so I'm interested.
Beautiful. Okay. So before he was possessed, he and his aunt used to use a Ouija board together. Shortly, she taught him how to use it to contact the spirits and everything, but, shortly after teaching him, she died. And
I'm not gonna say, like, they're asking for it, but, like, not to victim shame, but maybe, like, I don't know. Don't contact demons.
Yeah. Fun little facts about the Ouija board. It's rumored that the Ouija board just appeared out of nowhere, but also they say the first one was created in Maryland in the 1890s. There were.
I thought you meant their specific Ouija board.
No, just Ouija boards in general.
Okay.
I
was like, it appeared out of nowhere.
There were lawsuits involving a Ouija board to try and determine what it was. But in the 1920s, it was decided that it was not a religious device, but a board game.
Yeah, because you can buy Ouija boards with the board games.
Yeah, they're like at Walmart.
Feels sacrilegious.
Yes.
In some weird way.
So he wanted to use the Ouija board to contact his dead aunt. But shortly after that, he started to get scratches all over his body.
Mm.
Yeah. The scratches then eventually started turning into words.
Oh.
The first word being Lewis, which was his mom's hometown of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
They went there and contacted a medium to talk to, like, try and, like, see if there was something
like
in her.
Contact the thing.
But as the medium was conducting a seance, more marks appeared on his skin. The marks turned into the words "no school."
Interesting.
Yep.
Me too.
Right? After seeing this, the medium called a priest by the name of Father Raymond Bishop, who was a priest at St. Louis University, and he came to perform a blessing on the kid to try and fix him. However, while he was praying to over him, Roland's bed began to shake and tremble, and deep bloody gashes started to appear on his chest.
Don't love that.
Nope. After
it feels very like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, very that. After witnessing this event, the priest called the archbishop to perform a full exorcism.
Apparently, exorcisms are so rare in the Catholic Church. Like, they're, like, a real thing, but, like, they, like, only deploy the priests who can do the exorcisms in, like, extreme situations.
Okay. So, once the archbishop, who was Father William Bodern, came, the exorcisms that he was performing on Roland, he started, like, throwing increasingly more, like, violent tantrums. Is the word that one of the things that you called it.
Do you know how old the boy was? Was he an adult or a kid?
He was a, like, teenager, I want to say. Like, early teens, I think.
Okay. Like, 14, 15?
Yeah, that sounds right. I don't remember if, like, I found anything that actually said how old he was, but in my mind, that's what I picture.
That makes sense.
But I could be completely wrong. So, during one of the exorcisms, a crucifix in his room began to tremble, and his bed was shaking, and there was a vial of holy water that was supposed to be protecting him, and it, like, broke into pieces and sent glass shards everywhere.
Oh my god.
All throughout the exorcism, there were continuous markings, on his body that just kept happening.
Mm-hmm. He said, "Your mother sucks cocks in hell."
The explicit language that Roland Doe had shouted.
Oh my god, I predicted
you it. Really did. You were like, my next sentence.
Yeah.
Made them think that he was, like, sexually abused as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words he was using, he shouldn't have known for his age. Okay, so, young.
A kid, yeah.
Which suggests that it was, like, probably not just a mental disease. So, like, this boy was, like, actually possessed. It got so bad to the point where the priests believed they needed to baptize the boy. However, while they were on the way to the church, Roland tried to swerve the car off the road to try and crash and kill them all.
Shit, bro.
They said during that day, though, during the morning, when all this was happening, during the morning, he would be completely normal. But as soon as, it would get dark out, he would, fall into a trance. He was finally cured in 1949 during a lightning storm.
Oh.
He had no memory of what happened over the last 3 months. He, eventually moved past the ex, being possessed and everything, and had three children and a successful career.
Well, that's good for him.
Right. Unfortunately.
Oh.
Yeah. One of the priests that tried to cure him was on the brink of insanity by the end of the exorcisms. He also became possessed.
Oh my god. By the same demon or ghost or whatever?
It is unclear.
Okay.
On his deathbed, it's claimed that he, cursed a nurse out and tried to choke her to death.
Oh, so the priest was, permanently fucked up?
Yeah. But, some researchers of that the case believe that it could have just been mental illness.
Yeah, he just got triggered.
Yeah.
Hardcore by all the stuff. But it could have been, a combination.
Yeah. A mixture of both.
I don't
know
if I believe in possession.
Yeah, same.
But for the purposes of this episode, I'm going to just choose to believe.
So, yeah, this was the case that inspired The Exorcist. It was the novel first, obviously, that came out in 1971. He was 14 years old. Sorry. It did get written somewhere. And obviously the movie is a 12-year-old girl. But the majority of the details of the exorcism are the same, including her levitating, her head spinning, and projectile vomiting at the priests.
Yeah, and you probably know this, but that, what I said earlier.
Your mom sucks cocks in hell. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the little girl, yells that. I remember watching that movie when I was, 13 with my friends, and we were all, low-key scared, but, pretending we weren't. And then when that, your mother sucks cocks in hell line came, we were all like, what? Bro, have you ever seen the uncut version of The Exorcist?
I don't think I've fully seen all of The Exorcist.
Okay, so the first, two times I watched it, I watched it a more cut version that was more censored, because then I went and watched it by myself one time, and I think it was either, I don't know if it was just a non-censored version or if it was a director's cut or extended edition or what the fuck, but there's this fucking scene, and listen, it's not the real girl's body because it's fake or whatever, but there's this scene where they go upstairs and Reagan, who's the little girl who's possessed, and she's very possessed at this point, so her face is all messed up and all this stuff, she's there's a metal cross, a crucifix that's very large and silver metal and pointy, the end is sharp, and she's masturbating with it.
I've
but stabbing herself
heard
in
about
vagina,
that
bleeding.
Yeah, I've heard about
and I
that.
Watched that when I was 13 and I was what the fuck.
Yeah, I could see how that would scar a child. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. And I was also in Catholic school at this point.
Oh,
so I was
you're
what the fuck is going
this
on?
This can happen to me?
I was oh my god, I'm going to get possessed just for watching this.
The events that occurred during those few months gave most of the people involved nightmares for several decades following. And it's likely that if Roland hadn't lost his memory of the event, he would have lived the rest of his life in a mental hospital.
Yeah, I feel like if you go through something like that,
it's kind of hard to come back from it if you remember every single detail of it.
Yeah, if you're a demon possessed me and I was there the whole time.
It just was a...
Did they ever find out what was possessing him? Was it a demon? Was it a ghost? Did they,
it
have any
says
idea?
Demon, and everything that I read, it said it was a demon.
Okay. That makes sense because it was so, severe.
Yeah. And, I mean, I could be wrong, but isn't the kind of, idealism in the church that is usually a demon possessing and not a ghost, or is that not a thing?
I don't know because my church never talked about demons or ghosts or anything.
Fair. So I guess just like in my mind, because coming from a very Southern Baptist church, demons mm-hmm. were always talked about in quite a literal sense.
Yeah. I think it depends on the church because I know like some Catholic churches are very like conservative and like more traditional, I guess, with like the stuff that they talk about. But I guess maybe my church was just like a little more progressive or something because we never talked about like demons or like this is kind of like off on a tangent, but like I went to Catholic school and the principal, like her son was gay and we like all knew he was gay and he was out and we were all like, yay, you know?
Yeah.
And like one of the priests used to like skateboard around after church. Like it wasn't, and like when we talked about stuff, we kind of always talked about it like more in terms of like metaphors than like there are actually demons.
Yeah. You know? I guess that makes sense.
But I guess it just depends on like the church.
Yeah, I guess that's the same way with like, you know, Christian churches. Mm-hmm. Like there's different denominations or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah.
I think that was the right word. I think I was correct the first time.
It's like, yeah, that's like a more extreme version.
Yeah. But, anyway, that, excuse me, was the possession of Roland Doubt.
It, like, bums me out that a lot of the possession stories don't have, like, more information, but, like, I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
But
it's, like, also, like, I want to know more. I
know everything. Yeah. I'm like, ugh, why didn't they track down the demon?
If I would have had more time, I would have, like, watched The Exorcist and, like, watched, like, videos and, like, comparing it to the actual story. I just have been so busy that having time to just do the notes itself were, like, is cramped.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you feel.
We're not professionals.
Exactly. We don't get to do this full time. We have full time jobs.
Anyway, give us 5 stars so we can do this full time.
Please share this with everyone you know. Make them listen to it. Make them listen to it while they're asleep. They don't have.
Please?
We would appreciate it. I know we said last week that we're not doing this for like listens, but like also we want to quit our jobs eventually.
Ooh-hoo.
And do something that's not our jobs.
So would you like to take a break?
Yeah, on that note, let's pause and listen to our ad so we can get some coin.
Hey.
Alrighty, so I hope you enjoyed us talking about Anchor.
Anchor.
Now, Kath is going to talk about another ghost/demon person.
Mine is a poltergeist.
Ooh, fun. I like that.
Fun time. So this is known as the Enfield poltergeist. So the star of our show is Peggy Hodgson. She lived with her 4 children at 284 Green Street. She was a single mother. They lived in this rented house in Brimsden, Enfield, which is in London, England.
Love that accent.
Thank you.
So good.
I'm an actor.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I don't know why you're not in more productions already. Like, that was...
For real. Like, bitch, hire me.
Ring, I thought ring, you said retire BBC. Me.
Retire me.
Yeah, that too. Maybe that's a good idea too.
That as well. Anyway, so this takes place in August of 1977. So Peggy and her children were living in this house in Enfield, and they started hearing like banging in the walls at night. So,
oh dear God.
Yeah. One night Peggy hears like loud bangs and screaming coming from her daughter's bedroom, and it was kind of late at night, so she was gonna go in there and like tell them off for horse playing. That's what she said in like all her interviews. Like, she thought they were like fighting or like playing rough or something, so she was gonna be like, go to bed, you know, that like I was trying to channel the accent from that vine where the mom is like, disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
That's her coming in to be like, rough housing. Anyway, so this was the bedroom of Margaret, who was 13, and Janet, who was 11. And so Peggy comes into their room, and she finds them hiding in the corner, and their, like, chest of drawers is just sitting in the middle of the room. And the girls claimed that the drawers were moving by themselves and that it was coming towards them. Peggy thought that they were basically, like, that they were playing a joke, and was kind of being like, oh, okay, funny, go to bed. But then she witnessed the drawers moving herself in the direction of the door by what they described as a seemingly invisible force. And they felt like it was going up to the door to try to, like, trap them in the room.
I hate everything about that.
Yeah. I am being held hostage by a chest of drawers.
Please send help.
So Peggy tried to push back against the chest, but it basically, like, wouldn't move. And it was, like, not a big bureau or anything. Like, normally she would have been able to push it, but it, like, she could not even get it to budge a little bit. So they were obviously freaked out. So Peggy ran across the street to the neighbor's house, Vic and Peggy Nottingham, and they were nice and they came over to investigate. And they both said that they also heard these, like, strange banging sounds coming from the walls. So the Hodgsons called the police, and the police came and investigated. So Officer Carolyn Heaps was first on the scene, and she saw a chair, like, in the kitchen, start levitating and then move. She described...
Fuck that.
Yeah, she described this incident, like, quote, "The chair came off the floor, maybe a half inch, I should say, and I saw it slide off to the right about 3.5 to 4 feet before it came to rest." So it was, like, levitating off the ground, and then it just kind of, like, flew, like, a body length across the floor by itself.
Oh, my God.
However, the police were basically like, yeah, that's creepy, but it's not really our jurisdiction, so we're going to bounce. And they just left.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so the Hodgsons were basically like, well, like, it's not like we can really go anywhere, so they just, like, went to bed and tried to kind of go about their lives, but the incidents continued, and they started escalating, like, furniture just moving and, like, banging noises from the wall. Like, there was just, like, constant sound coming from the wall, and, like, furniture just was moving on its own all the time. Eventually it got too overwhelming for the family and the police couldn't do anything. So Peggy decided to call a reporter from a publication called the Daily Mirror, and they came to investigate it as a story about supernatural experiences. So the reporter came with, like, his team, and they came into the house, and basically from the second they entered, it just went silent, and the house was completely silent. All the furniture was staying in its place for, like, hours. So after sitting there for, like, 6 hours, the reporting team was basically like, okay, this is bullshit, and they started to leave. But as they were walking towards the door, a Lego brick flew across the room and hit photojournalist Graham Morris above the eye. And he had, like, a huge lump and, like, a mark on his face for days. So, like, indicating that it flew across the room with a lot of force.
Yeah.
So Morris and the rest of the team went into the kitchen, and one by one, they started bringing in the children, all asleep in their mom's arms. And Morris said about this, the last one to come in was Janet. Suddenly things just took off and just started flying around the room. And he was convinced that the objects weren't, like, being thrown or anything. He said while they were, like, flying around the room, he moved to every corner. And he said that, like, every member of the family wasn't doing anything. They were just standing there, like, definitely not throwing anything.
Holy shit.
And he believed that the supernatural being had a connection with the children, and specifically Janet, because whenever Janet came into the room, the objects started, like, going crazy. Graham also describes a series of photos that he took at the time that was, like, Janet levitating, and these are kind of famous pictures. She's basically, like, above the bed, and she kind of looks like she's screaming. But she's, like, vertical. She's not like laying down. So many people believe that it's a hoax and that she's just like jumping on the bed. But other people are saying that like the way she was positioned, it like wasn't a jumping position, and she, like, I don't know, physics or whatever, she couldn't have like gotten at this angle or whatever, just jumping.
Mm-hmm.
So like this whole thing was being regularly published on in the Daily Mirror, and it kind of created this whole public thing where people were like, oh my God, it's a poltergeist. And other people were like, no, it's a hoax and stuff like that. So the Daily Mirror called the Society for Psychical Research. And they sent a paranormal investigator named Maurice Gross to investigate the house. So during his stay at the house, Gross documented over 2,000 different incidents of supernatural activity.
Wow.
These included furniture moving and flying around, cups filling themselves with water, fires igniting spontaneously, voices and banging sounds from the walls, and objects and even people levitating. Jesus. In an interview, the youngest daughter, Janet, said that the most frightening encounter was when a curtain wrapped itself around her neck next to her bed and started choking her, and that she was, like, close to passing out when her mom came in the room and helped pull the curtain off her neck.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So in early November, 2 months after this started, so this stuff had been going on for 2 full months, Gross actually confronted the poltergeist in the living room. He went in, because that's where a lot of the activity was happening, and he asked the ghost, are you having a game with me? And he claims that a cardboard box and a pillow, like, flew from the other side of the room and hit him in the face.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was also around this time in November that the poltergeist began possessing 11-year-old Janet.
Oh.
She began regularly going into trances, and she would sometimes just sit in the living room and stare completely unblinkingly at the wall. After a while, she started talking during her trances in this very deep, raspy voice. She claimed to be a man named Bill, and he would tell the family to, quote, leave his house. The trances would sometimes last for hours at a time, with Janet speaking in this really deep voice, and she would be yelling at and threatening her family and the investigators to leave the house. And they all said that this sometimes would go on for like 3-4 hours. They were filming all of this because they were documenting it for this newspaper, mm-hmm, or magazine or whatever it was. So there are videos of her going into these trances online and like talking in the like deep ghost voice.
Jesus.
Yeah. Janet at the time said she could feel something in her. So she remembered the trances that she went into, and she said it felt like something was talking from the back of her head, and she kind of was like there, but like not in control.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so Maurice Gross, the paranormal investigator, actually invited his son Richard to come to the house to cross-examine the ghost.
Why the fuck would you... young son?
No, like, his son is a lawyer.
Oh.
And he was like, come cross-examine this ghost.
My brain immediately went to, like, 6-year-old kid.
No, adult son.
Okay. I was like, why in the fresh fuck would you just be like, hey, buddy, you want to go play with a ghost?
Actually, this is, like, only semi-related, but while I was, like, researching this, I found a lot of information about Maurice Gross, and he actually had, like, an entirely different career, and his children were adults. Like, he wasn't doing anything involving with paranormal stuff, and then his daughter died, and then he got really into, like, communicating with spirits and eventually became a paranormal investigator.
What year is this, by the way? Did you say?
1977, I believe.
Oh, that's, like...
Yeah, 1977.
That's not super...
long ago, yeah.
Yeah. Like, mine was, like, in, like, the early 1900s.
Shit. Yeah, this one is recent. That's why there's, like, video and, like, photos.
Oh, yeah,
like,
right, you said pictures.
The videos are actually, like, freaking creepy. I mean, some people think that... we'll get into the hoax thing in a little bit. But, yeah, okay. So the... Richard Gross, the adult son who is a lawyer, came to cross-examine the ghost, which I just think is such a funny sentence. And so he was interviewing this ghost, and he asked the ghost who was speaking through Janet. So he asked Janet if, like, I'm just going to say, pronouns are hard because I'm talking about a male ghost inside of a little girl.
Yeah.
But he asked the poltergeist speaking through Janet if he remembered how he died. And Janet replied, quote, "I had a hemorrhage and I fell asleep and I died in a chair in the corner downstairs." The voice also said, "I'm invisible because I'm a," and then shouted "ghost."
Shouted the letters?
Yeah, he spelled out ghost, like shouting it. He's sassy.
I love that, actually.
Yeah. He's like, I mean, he's mean, but like.
Yeah, but that was funny.
Yeah, go him. So overall, this haunting, you said your haunting, well, your haunting, the possession that you talked about went on for like 2 months, right?
It was like two or three, yeah.
This poltergeist was active and this investigation was going on for 18 months.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Toward the end of the investigation, Gross began inviting other paranormal investigators to come take a look because they were there for over a year, and I feel like they got to a point where they were literally like, can anybody else figure this shit out?
No, like, because I fucking can't, and I'm going crazy.
So, famous demonologists Ed and Lorraine Warren actually came to the house for a little while, and they were like, there is definitely 100% positively supernatural things happening here.
Yeah.
You might know of Ed and Lorraine Warren from the Conjuring series. This story is actually basically retold. I mean, it's dramatized, obviously, but this story is what inspired The Conjuring 2.
Okay, see, the name sounded familiar when you said that, and I was like, I feel like that's a movie, but I wasn't going to say something in case that sounded stupid, but I'm glad to know that I wasn't stupid. We're both based off of movies.
Oh, yeah, yes, that's. I feel like both. That was the best way to find, like, possession stories. I was just like, possession, true.
Well, because the ones based off of movies are going to have the most...
like, information, yeah.
Because, you know, they got it to do a movie on.
Mm-hmm. So they obviously had enough information to write a story based on it. I was thinking about, because I love the... I'm pretty sure the first Conjuring movie is also based on a true story, although I think they made up a lot of it. But have you seen The Conjuring 1?
I'm not entirely sure. I think I've seen the first one. I'm not sure if I've seen the second one.
The second one is okay. The first Conjuring movie is amazing. The way it's done, the suspense and everything is so good.
I'm, like, just now getting into, like, horror movies.
Bro.
Like, as a child, and even as, like, a teenager, I just couldn't watch them. They would give me so much, I would have so much anxiety about watching them.
Oh, no. I don't know why, when I was, like, 13, me and my friends got very into the Friday the 13th series.
Mm.
And that made me get really into Scream and, like, all those other slashers. And then my parents have always been very into Stephen King, so that probably also added to it.
Yeah.
But, like, I love horror movies. I feel like a lot of people say that horror and comedy are the two hardest, like, genres to pull off. And I think, like a well-made horror movie is so impressive.
I agree.
And The Conjuring is so good.
I remember, like, distinctly when I was a kid, there was a time when my dad rented one of the Halloween movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the new one that had come out back when I was, like, you know, like, probably 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little older, if I'm being honest. And I hid upstairs while they watched it.
Oh, no.
And even that scared me because my dad is the kind of dad who had, like, who has a really nice sound system with their TV.
Oh, yeah.
And
so,
and whenever he's watching a movie, it has to be at, like, movie theater level volume.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could hear everything upstairs, like, all of the murder sounds, the screaming, all of it. And even just that was terrifying me. I think I ended up reading, like, Harry Potter or something to try and, like, drown it out.
Be like, everything's okay. My dad, I've talked about this before, that I, like, am freaked out by clowns and possession and stuff, and I think a lot of it is because my dad showed me the movie It when I was, like, 8, or the miniseries, whatever. But I found out recently that I was, we were both talking about that. He was like, I really scarred you as a child by showing you that movie, and I was like, yeah. And then he was like, I probably shouldn't have showed a 3-year-old that movie, and I was like, 3? You showed me that when I was 8 and it freaked me out. And he was like, I showed it to you before when you were 3. And I think, like, the reason it freaked, and I know it, when I watched it when I was 8 and I literally was terrified for months. Like, I remember going to look at Christmas lights, so in December, and I was with my mom and I was like about to start crying every time we walked past a drain.
Oh my God.
So, like, that was 2 months. And I think it was, like, I watched it when I was 3 and I didn't remember it because I was a baby, but, like, it seeped into my subconscious. And then when I watched it again when I was 8, it, like, enacted, like, a fight or flight response.
And your body's like, I got to go.
Yeah, I was like, this is bad. The clowns are coming.
I mean, even now, if I'm watching a horror movie, I like the, like, more thriller, psychological horror movie kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah,
I really don't like jump scare horror movies because I, like, again, I just get that, like, really bad anxiety while watching it. And yeah. Anytime, like, the music starts to get suspenseful and stuff, like, I'll look away. Like, I can't.
Yeah. No, I feel like that, I mean, that's a move. You're like, I know what's happening. I think, the best horror movies are ones that, like, we saw Us together, right?
Yeah.
I really liked Us. A lot of people didn't like it, but...
Okay, full disclosure, I did not understand it at all the first time I watched it. However, and I just remember the entire time being like, what is happening? And then the ending, and I was like, what? And then you and Lexi were, like, in-depth discussing it and talking about it on the way home, and I was just like, I don't understand what happened. I watched it again recently, and I was like, oh, this movie is so good.
Like, but the fact, like, that they switched, you didn't, like, get that?
I didn't process it. The entire ride home, I was trying to, like, wrap my head around it, and I was like, but if, and then if they, and they, and it just, every time I think about it, I would just work myself deeper and deeper into a hole until you dropped me off at my apartment, and then I was like, I don't understand what I just watched.
I love that for you.
But, like, I watched, what's it called? Freaky, I think it was called.
I want to see that.
I watched it. Stevie and I went, like, on a date for the first time in literally, like, 8 months. Because, you know, COVID.
Yeah.
But we went and saw it as, like, a little fun date. And there was, like, it was a good movie, but there was still, like, a few jump scare points. And it got to a point where, like, it was getting too suspenseful and, like, kept not happening. Like, very Tower of Terror kind of vibe. Yeah. Like, you think it's gonna happen and it doesn't. And so I just, like, stopped looking at the screen for a minute. And we were in the, like, movie theater that has the huge screen with the, like, the big-ass sound system. And I'm just, like, staring at the floor.
Can't get jump scared if you're astral projecting.
Exactly. The seats were heated and they reclined, and I'm like, I'm not here.
Oh shit, the height of luxury.
I know, I was like, we're going to a nice movie theater, because we wanted to go to one that we figured would be better under, like, you know, like, handling the pandemic and everything. And this one is just like love seat kind of vibe.
Oh, okay. That's a move.
They only, like, it was like rows of love seats, but they only allowed every other set of them to be occupied.
Mm-hmm. I used to go to the movie theater all the time, and I haven't been in probably like a year, and I'm so sad about it. I
did too. Go to a movie and theater. Movies here are so cheap. Like, I paid like $16 for us two to go see this movie.
Bro, it's like $12 a freaking person here.
I know. I, like, when I first moved here and started going to see movies, there's a movie theater, like the AMC over here. Tickets are like $5.
Why is everything so cheap there?
I don't understand it. Like, it broke me when I first saw it. Like, I thought maybe, I'm like, oh, it's just like a summer deal thing, you know? Like, oh, $5.99 movies, but it's only certain movies. And then I, like, bought a ticket to go see, like, a movie that had just come out, and it was, like, $5.99. I was like, what?
That's why I go to movies, like, on Tuesday afternoons. That's when you get the cheap tickets.
Gotta get those matinee tickets, baby. We're not students anymore.
Yee-yee. Although my student ID doesn't,
have an expiration date.
It expired. Well, it has an expiration date, but it's in 2021. And I'm like, you better believe I'm riding this wagon till the fucking wheels fall off.
And I mean, no one's going to look at it either. Like, it's just a college ID.
I also have, a lot of places have, like, educator discounts now.
Oh, so true. You're like, I'm that too, bitch.
Yeah.
I'm like in a weird
double discount.
Places that have like, you know, healthcare worker discounts and stuff. I'm in a weird like in between zone. Because I mean, I am a healthcare worker, but they're like, you work at an eye doctor. And
I'm
I was
like,
like, and
yes, and eyes
that
are
is still a
important.
doctor.
Yeah.
And they're like, is it though?
Let me crush your glasses on the ground and then we'll see how you feel about it.
Oh my God, I told you this happened, but the other day I'm like in the middle of checking this lady's pressures, and like that involves putting a little device right up against the surface of their eye.
That's the worst
And
thing.
this bitch looks up at me and says, "Excuse me, are you a ma'am, a man or a lady?"
What a random question to ask.
Well, okay, I mean, so I get it all the time. Like, I get called she and her all the time. And
Just
it's
'cause you have long
because
hair?
my hair is long and I'm wearing a mask. And, you know, I work with blind people. And so their only, like, thought process is long blonde hair. That's a woman.
Lady.
And so I said, I'm a man. And she replied, you can't tell. She's like, the
That's when you'd
voice,
be like, thank
maybe.
you.
She's like, the voice, maybe, but the hair, nope. And I was like,
It's not even that long.
no. I mean, it's
Like,
like
it's
down to my
long, but it's
shoulders
not
now, but
like.
like, it's not like down to my ass.
I think it looks good, though.
I do too. And
Fuck a blind bitch.
I was like, I am putting something against your eye and you want to offend me?
You're like, I could blind you.
More than you already are. Anyway, let's talk about hoaxes.
Oh yes. So the because they were basically being followed by like a paranormal investigator and they were constantly reporting this, like it was a regular update thing for the Daily Mirror. A lot of people were talking about this. And it's probably pretty evenly split between people who think it was a genuine poltergeist and people who believe it was a hoax, created by the children.
Fair.
So, among the people who came to visit the house were like magicians and ventriloquists as well. And a lot of ventriloquists were saying that the voice that Janet was doing when she was being possessed was like a ventriloquism trick. To like deepen your voice. And the children were caught once bending spoons to like pretend that the spoons all got bent by themselves. Janet has later admitted, now as an adult, that her and her siblings faked some events, but she says they only did it a few times to see if Mr. Gross and the other investigators would notice. And she says they could always tell the difference between the fake attempts and the real paranormal attempts.
Oh my God.
And Janet says to this day that at maximum they faked about 2% of the events in the house.
At Mac, I love that she has a percentage.
Yeah, she was like, "Listen, I have calculated it. At max, 2%."
Most likely though, 1.3.
Yeah. There were over 30 eyewitnesses in total who saw and heard paranormal events in the house. This includes neighbors, psychic researchers, journalists, and even the local lollipop lady who popped in and said, "Yeah, there's some fuck shit happening in that house."
The
Direct
local
quote.
lollipop lady.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's an English thing. I don't know. I've never heard of a lollipop lady.
I mean, is it like it sounds? Like, is it someone who just sells lollipops in the street?
Handy from the trolley days. That's her.
She
So,
grew up.
You know how I was saying that Janet, when she was in her possessed state, was she would like sit in the living room and stare at the wall, and she said that she died of a hemorrhage in the corner and that her name was Bill.
Yeah.
The researchers for the house later found out they found the son of the guy who owned the house before the Hodgsons. And they found out that the previous owner's name was Bill Wilkerson, and he did indeed die in the corner of the living room from a hemorrhage.
Fuck that. Fuck that.
Yeah. After a year and a half, the Daily Mirror stopped publishing reports on the poltergeist, and according to the family, the haunting activity began fading and eventually stopped, finally, in 1979, 2 years after the initial incident.
Jesus Christ.
Peggy Hodgson kept her house, and she also died there in 2003.
That's, like, recent.
Yeah. Peggy was like, this my fucking house, bitch. I'm not leaving. I don't care if there's a goddamn violent poltergeist. He doesn't pay the rent anymore.
Right. He lost the right to have a say when he died.
Yeah.
I pay the rent here now.
She was like, I'm sorry, Bill. I don't see your name on the lease.
Shouldn't have died from a hemorrhage.
I mean, rest in peace, but also maybe, like, don't possess little girls. That's weird, Bill.
Yeah, don't possess little girls. Don't throw furniture at people. It's not nice. Don't give someone a welt on their forehead from a Lego.
My favorite quote that I read about this was, there was a magician who came into the house towards the end of the hauntings, and he was like, I know magic, and this is all cheap tricks. And I was like, I'm obsessed with how dramatic that is.
Hello. I just, like, that came out of nowhere. I'm so sorry.
Don't die.
Was that the end of it? Is it over?
That is the end of it. Although I do have something, one more thing that I want to talk about. Okay. It's not related to possessions at all, but it was breaking news today. Oh. So I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Time Person of the Year?
No.
Oh.
The last Zodiac killer cipher was solved.
I did not see that. I thought we were going a completely different direction with that.
No, so the Zodiac, we talked about the Zodiac Killer a couple weeks ago. I think it's actually not a couple weeks ago. It was actually a very long time ago. But
a couple episodes ago. Four or five episodes back now. Four episodes back now, I believe.
Yes, a couple episodes ago is what I meant. It was actually like
6 months ago.
Yeah, but so if you watch that episode, you will know that there was this, you know how the Zodiac Killer was sending ciphers mm-hmm. with his letters to the Chronicle, I believe, was the website that he was writing to?
Yes. Well, newspaper, not website.
Website. Where am I? Listen, I said that because I'm looking at a website right now and my brain was like, website.
That's where the Zodiac Killer sent his letters. Websites existed.
Yes. What year was this? 1970. Either way, it's been 51 years. So this letter, this cipher was sent to, I believe it was the Chronicle, 51 years ago. And this is, it was called Cipher 340. It was named for the number of characters in it. And it, like, they were never able to solve it. A bunch of people tried to solve it and they, like, came up with some answers, but they, like, didn't really make sense. Like, they were things like, if you, like, left out a bunch of letters and, like, ignored whole chunks of the thing, like, it didn't make any sense. But it was solved this month, on December 3rd. And it was solved by a group of three. It was solved by a computer programmer named David Orenchak, a Belgian computer programmer named Jarl von Eyck, and an Australian applied mathematician named Sam Blake. So they worked on it together, and they basically made a bunch of computer simulations to read it.
That's so cool.
And some interesting things is that... Okay, so the 340 cipher was sent to the Chronicle on November 8th, 1969. It was the first letter that they received after the guy who claimed he was the Zodiac Killer went on to the Jim Dunbar show and, like, talked to the host. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how we talked about that?
Yeah.
So this was the first letter that they received after that happened, and they were never able to solve it. But according to how these people solved it, and the FBI confirmed that this is that they believe that this is the correct solving of the cipher. So this is what the cipher says. It says, I hope you are having lots of fun and trying to catch me. That wasn't me on the TV show, which brings up a point about me. I am not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise all the sooner, because I now have enough slaves to work for me, where everyone else has nothing when they reach paradise, so they are afraid of death. I am not afraid because I know that my new life is, life will be an easy one in paradise death.
Holy shit.
And it has some interesting things. Like, do you remember how he, like, purposefully would misspell words?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things specifically was that he would replace S's with C's. With this cipher, the way paradise is spelled is P-A-R-A-D-I-C-E.
Mm.
Like, so their solving of the cipher includes, like, his common misspelled words and stuff like that. Anyway, so this is probably the correct solving of it.
Damn, I was naively hoping that it would be something that would, like, help, you know, catch him 51 years later, but he's probably dead now.
Yeah, I mean, they think it was probably that Alan guy.
Yeah.
Wasn't that who we said we thought it was? But I'm trying to find the FBI of San Francisco. Oh, fuck.
Hmm.
Okay, so I'm reading from, a website called SFGate.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, in 2018, investigators used genetic genealogy to track down, this is talking about the Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
Okay, so it says, in the early 2000s, San Francisco investigators developed a partial profile by testing saliva traces retrieved from beneath a stamp of one of his letters. And they said that this ruled out Arthur Lee Allen in 2002, but also I feel like that's dumb because what if he just got somebody else to lick his stamp?
Yeah.
I mean, he was talking about how
it wasn't him on the TV show and all sorts of shit like that, so I mean, it would make sense if he had
somebody else to lick his stamp. But yeah, the FBI, like the San Francisco FBI put out a statement being like, we are aware that the cipher was solved by private citizens. The Zodiac Killer case is still open and actively being investigated. Yeah. I want to know.
I want to know whose job it is still to, like, take new leads on those cases. Because you have to think, there's no way that there's still a task force actively, like, pursuing leads. Like, it's a person who's like, oh, if we ever get a new lead, you're the one who's in charge of, like, dealing with it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's like it's one of those things where they can't really actively investigate anymore. I mean, private citizens solved the cipher. It's not like they were trying to solve it, you know?
Right.
So I think they just kind of, like, if evidence is, like, handed to them, they're like, thank you, this will go in the file. But I don't think they're, like, actively, like, out there looking for evidence, because
didn't,
you know?
Isn't Arthur Lee Allen, didn't he die in prison?
Yeah.
Or not prison, but he died.
He was in prison at one point, but yeah, he died, I think, of a heart attack.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, he's most people's, like, believed suspect.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at that point,
I feel like he did it, and I know part of the reason I feel like he did it is because of the movie Zodiac, and it's just well made, and I'm in love with Jake Gyllenhaal, and he believed that it was Arthur Lee Allen, so I'm like, Jake Gyllenhaal is probably right, it was Arthur Lee Allen.
I mean, no, yeah. I also watched Zodiac after you had recommended it, and I was like, I want a movie to watch that's just fun to play in the background.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about Zodiac, but every time we just, like, not every time, but there was, like, a phase for a while where every time Alex wanted to just put something on to have something on, he would put on Zodiac.
I remember you saying that, and that's what made me think about it. I was like, I want to see why Alex vibed with it so hard, and so I watched it. I was like, I see why it was such a good vibe.
Yeah.
It's a well-made movie.
Out here recommending shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just thought that was a fun little tidbit because I know we talked about the Zodiac Killer, so I thought I would provide you guys with an update.
Yeah. Also, speaking of Alex, he drew us a really cool new logo that is now on all of our episode, like, covers.
Yes.
And we posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, he designed two cool things for us. I think we're using the, like, first one that he designed, and then I think maybe if we, like, keep this up for like 6 months. Maybe we'll change it to the next one. That'll be our next cover. It's next in line.
It's really cool. I'm really excited for it to be used. I like it a lot.
Me too. We're ghosts. And maybe if our podcast gets big enough, we can like sell it. He originally was like, I designed you guys a poster.
Uh-huh.
So I was like,
live shows.
Let's have posters.
Do a live show for our 30 listeners.
Yes. Ugh, that would be so fun. You know, sometimes like smaller musicians do house party tours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm obsessed with that. That sounds so cute.
My last apartment I lived in, we had one. Our basement hosted.
Oh my God, like, I love house that. Parties.
But,
I believe that is a nice place to end it.
Yeah, it's a nice little stopping point. Be sure to go give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, or, you know, less than 5 stars if you think we deserve less than 5 stars.
No, if you think we deserve less than 5 stars, just stop listening.
But, yeah, we will be back next week with another old spooky tale.
Scary.
I forgot what it is. I remember. Okay.
But, yeah, don't get possessed. Don't play with Ouija boards.
Good lessons to learn. One of them more attainable than the other.
I feel like it's pretty obtainable to not play with Ouija boards.
No, I know. That's right. That was the one I was meaning, being more attainable.
You meant getting possessed is less attainable?
You can't control getting possessed.
Yeah, but you're more likely to get possessed if you do some fuck shit like play with Ouija boards.
Okay, fair. Lessen your chances of getting possessed by not playing with Ouija boards.
I That's almost called said street lessen, smarts.
Lessen your chances of getting possessed by playing with Ouija boards.
Then you build up a tolerance. You build up an immunity to the demons.
And this has been an advertisement for the Ouija board company. Hasbro. That is the Ouija board company.
Yeah.
They're made by Hasbro. Anyway, that has been Kath.
That has been Chris.
And we will be us again next week.
Stay spooky, y'all.
Bye.